Welcome to episode 6 of the JP Talk Show. This time I was fortunate enough to sit down with Paralympic gold medalist Liam Malone. Recently at the Paralympics, Liam won the silver medal in the 100 metres and took the gold in both the 2 and the 400 metres. And in the process, he smashed Oscar Pretorius' record in the 200 metres. And we also go into a bit of detail how he spoke with Oscar on Skype, actually earlier in the year. And soon after the games, Liam managed to grasp the world's attention with his attitude, probably, and his outlook on life. And he managed to feature on the UK fundraiser Stand Up to Cancer, where he made a huge impact. So we sort of talk about Liam's journey leading up to and after the Rio Games, dealing with adversity, and what's next for the 22-year-old. I think you're really going to love this one. I certainly did, because Liam is an absolute champ. Enjoy.
Welcome to the JP Talker Show.
So, now you can just start. We'll just yarn. Go wherever it goes.
I'll say welcome to the JP Talker Show to Liam Malone. Thank you for responding to my tweet and about five people tagging you on my Facebook.
Yeah, I think we've got a couple of mutual friends. Yeah. Arnie Akaboba. Are you related to Theo?
Yeah, Theo's my cousin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know Theo.
Yeah, so how do you know Theo? Is Theo from down in Blenheim days?
So he's obviously a Blenheim lad, and then I've got a bunch of friends who are all from Blenheim, and his close friend group is kind of now my close friend group.
Because I didn't realise that, so like how it happened is, I was talking to my mates, and they said, oh, who else have you got left to interview? And I said, I don't know. And they said, who would you want to interview? And I said, well, kind of all agreed, how about that guy Liam, he'd be awesome. And I was like, oh yeah. And then there was like, well, why don't you just start, like, find out where he is? And I was like, oh, all you can do is try, right? So, and that's how it happened.
No, absolutely. I'm all about just kind of just going for it, eh? Yep. So, obviously, when a few of my friends tagged me, and I was like, oh, yeah, why not? And I'm all about podcasts. Podcasts are absolutely awesome.
Yeah, man. Like I was saying, like, you listen to a Joe Rogan podcast?
Yeah, every single day.
Every single day? Yeah. Who else?
And a bit of a catch-up stage. Yeah, Tim Ferriss. The guy who does Entrepreneur on Fire, which is evading my mind at the moment.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Yeah, that's why I can't remember his name, but it's called Entrepreneur on Fire, which is pretty good. And he basically just goes through the different entrepreneurs and goes through their challenges and stuff.
Yep.
I don't know. Neil deGrasse Tyson's one. Yeah. Occasionally. Yeah. The main one I listen to is Joe, and then I kind of just flicker on the other ones, but Joe is just.
Did you listen to the one with Dan Bilzerian?
Yeah, that was incredible.
Do you reckon he's legit?
What I've read is that he definitely inherited a lot of his money.
Yeah.
And the whole gambling thing was, like, he uses his inherited money and he gambles. Yeah. And then, like, obviously, as he says in the show, he's, like, a business, so his personality is a business.
Yeah.
So I reckon he's legit. Like, the whole Marines thing. So in the show, Dan Bilzerian is saying, like, he's going to make it into the Marines, and then Joe Rogan starts quizzing him, and, like, he's pretty...
It chops and changes, though. Yeah. Like,
I don't know if he's legit. I mean, he's got to be legit in some sense. And he's a genius.
Because he went on, just before that one, he went on Howard Stern, you know, the shock jock.
Yeah.
And Howard asked him a similar line of questioning. And it was kind of just didn't flow, you know. I don't know. Anyway, he's a smart dude, right? Like, I've seen him play poker online, so he's not just muscled up dude.
No, like, and he's definitely not faking the whole poker thing. Yeah. He's obviously pretty exceptional at that. Yeah.
Hey, you just finished an exam and you said it was event marketing.
Yeah.
So what did you come out with in terms of your degree?
Bachelor in Commerce, majoring in Marketing and International Business.
That's probably a pretty good option for you, a bit of marketing.
Yeah, sure.
Do you know what you're going to do next? What's happening now?
I might look at starting my own business. Obviously, I'll carry on with training. So my training at a maximum takes up 4 hours a day in terms of, you know, travel, physio, recovery and the actual training routine itself, and then so if I allot myself maybe another 9 hours a day, I can essentially work 9 hours a day on a business if I wanted to.
Yeah, and just in terms of the training, you talk about 4 hours a day of training, and in fact, actually, one of my mates messaged me and said, "Oh, you're always up at Newtown Track."
Yeah, all the time.
And in one of the documentaries, I did a lot of study last night. You're sort of saying that, hey, look, there's only a certain amount of hours you can spend in your blades a week. Is that right?
No, not quite. So what happens is, I think I might have been referring to, like, do my blades weaken over time. Right. And so every kind of time I take a stride, my blade essentially breaks a little bit because it's carbon fibre. And how carbon fibre is structured is that the fibre is split apart, called delaminating.
Yeah.
And so each kind of set of blades only has a certain amount of hours that they can do before you need new ones.
So the current pair that you've got now, how long have you had those?
Maybe 6 months.
And they're what, 25?
Well, I'm sponsored by that company now, so they kind of fund everything for me, yeah. Otherwise...
But the first pair, right? So the first pair was like $22,000 or something like
that? Yeah, probably around $25,000. So the blades themselves don't actually cost that much. It's when you... The blade's like a separate attachment to my actual prosthetic. So the blade goes on the back of my prosthetic, which is like the bit that goes over my leg.
Yep.
And like the hours it takes in like attaching the blade to the socket and making new sockets for the blades, because they ones I don't walk around on.
Yeah.
There's a lot of labor hours involved and costs in that, and it just eventually cost about $25,000.
When did the sponsorship come along?
So I went to World Champs in 2015, and I went, I couldn't afford new blades. Like this was the original pair of blades that the New Zealand public crowdfunded. And I went there, competed, did really badly. I got fifth and sixth in the 100 and 200, came back from that, which was October. I emailed them saying, look, I was looking at the competition saying, I can 100% beat these guys. There's no way that they're going to beat me if my blades aren't broken. Emailed the company with a proposition, and they came back and said, hell yeah, let's do it. And they've been cranking ever since.
Nice. So when you got the new ones, was there like a big difference? Like you just
I dropped 2 seconds over my 400 meters. Yeah.
That's massive.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That is incredible. And what about your 100? Because... right at the start, right, you must be putting a shitload of load on the blades when you're coming out of the blocks.
You do tend to generate a lot of force because you spend more time at the point of contact with the ground. But it's hard for me to generate force because on my blades, in that starting position, which is quite like angular and horizontal with the ground, I'm not that stable. So I can't generate a lot of force there, and that's why my starts are really bad.
You're sort of doing a three-point start, eh?
Yeah, I do. I was doing out of the blocks, but it's advantageous for doubling. I don't even know why they have it. So double amputees are allowed to do a three-point start, and I'm like, it's a million times
easier. I did athletics at school, and most of the, you know, being in Wellington, most of the good athletes are Samoan, you know? And those guys have got quads and haven't even seen a gym yet at 17, 16, so... I was always the white battler for the first 50 metres and I'll be trying to have a crack at the last. So I like the 200 because I was like, I've got a crack here because I've got 100 metres to catch up and then it's just the 100 metre sprint down the back. And, oh man, that 100 where you just, it looked like you're going about three times faster than everyone else in like the last 20 or 30 metres.
Yeah, sure. So the single leg amputees have an advantage over the first 50 because they have that one good leg to drive off during that driving stage.
Yep.
And then after that, my top speed's a lot higher than theirs.
Yep.
And that's why in the last kind of 15 metres, I shot from 6th to 2nd.
My wife last night, and she wanted me to ask you this, because we were watching, and she said, he's totally disadvantaged because of the single leg, exactly what you just said. And I said, no, I don't think so. I said, surely, in terms of height and length and stuff, it would be more of an advantage. That's really interesting that you say that.
It's certainly an advantage over 200 metres and 400 metres.
Yep. And so... For you coming up, I know you want to have a crack. You still want to focus on the 400 and the 200?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you were having a look at, what did you want to crack, about 46?
No, I'll go into the 45s at Nationals.
Are you 45?
Yeah, I'm 46.2 at Rio.
Yeah.
And I'll hopefully go into 45.8 at Nationals. That's our target. And that'll break the New Zealand able-bodied record, which is 46.1. I nearly broke it there.
Yeah. So what was your last 400 metre time?
46.2.
Fuck, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I was wrecked, man, because I'd had 5 races just before that, back-to-back pretty much.
Yeah.
I was sleeping 3 hours a night. My body was just aching going into that race. I was drained, I was stressed, wanted to just go home.
Was that like, you know, in Rio, you talked about moment in the 100 metres, it was your mum's birthday, you hadn't slept, you were jet-lagged. You looked massively drained. Is this something you seem to be able to get up for the when it counts?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I draw on my mum watching her go through chemotherapy.
Yeah.
But I mean, once you're out there, your adrenaline levels kick in anyway.
Yeah.
So all that fatigue and stuff kind of goes because you go into threat mode because you're kind of anxious in the environment that you're in. And I just lap that up and once I'm out on that track, I feel like that's my point of where I just feel free. I feel good to go. I mean, I've trained for 2 years in Wellington by myself, in like the worst conditions ever. Like I get onto a track in Rio and it doesn't matter who's beside me. I never get anxious. It's just running.
Like you guys don't know what a Wellington Subtly is. Like,
yeah. No idea, yeah.
Newtown track is, you know,
sideways rain.
It's the worst, windiest, coldest place in Wellington, eh? It is. Hey, and do you guys, you talk about arousal levels? You guys talking about, I've talked to a couple of mates and they were measuring in sprinters but also rugby players through their saliva. I think they're saying it was arousal levels, but it was to do with your adrenaline and the levels and how you build up to a race.
Right. That'd be interesting. I've never looked at anything like that.
Yeah, because you look pretty pumped up on the TV, like, you know, obviously seconds before. Do you have to use music or is it or anything else other than just what you're internally using to motivate yourself?
Internal motivators.
Yeah.
You're not allowed music in the core room. You're in the core room 45 really? Minutes before.
Not even the headphones?
Not even the headphones. No way. So it's not like swimming. They get to take their headphones into core room for some reason. That's when you see Michael Phelps. He's got his headphones on, the hoodie on, kind of blaring out death metal or whatever. Yeah. I sit in the call room and I just look at the other guys. I spit heaps for some reason.
Yeah.
And I mean, to me, running is literally just, it's one leg in front of the other. Yeah. It's the simplest, most basic human kind of thing to do.
Yeah.
And if you're getting nervous and stuff beforehand, I don't know, that just seems bizarre to me.
What about, do you have that, you know, the starter's gun and that, like if you go to athletics and you're watching other people compete and you hear that starter's gun, do you get those little butterflies in your stomach?
Not at all. So it's just like I used to.
Yeah.
And then, which kind of like delays the reaction.
Yeah.
I definitely used to get that, but I really practiced on mindfulness and mindlessness.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So those two things definitely help. So a lot of the people will go into the blocks and focus on trying to react to it. I go into the blocks, get into my set position, and I just don't think about anything.
Yeah.
So it's more just kind of like a natural response instead of a controlled response.
Dude. And so you just mentioned mindfulness and mindlessness,
which is essentially the same thing.
Yeah. And do you practice mindfulness daily? Is it?
I should. So I'm at the moment, I'm trying to like destroy all of my bad habits.
Yeah. Okay.
And mindfulness is like the practice, is what I'm using to practice kind of getting organized. Right. So I've got to, like, the major thing that's holding me back from doing way more things is that I'm disorganized.
Right.
And so now the way I practice getting organized is that, so like my room is typically messy, my car's typically messy.
Yep.
When I find myself getting distracted, going on social media, or having loads of crazy thoughts about like companies that I'd like to start or different kind of pathways I'd like to go down, that's when you're thinking in the future or you're thinking in the past. You're not focusing on the present, and this is why I have trouble getting my assignments done. And so my practice to then I get organized by then I use that time to go and clean, which is kind of like something that I'm failing at, and then so I'm kind of getting two birds at once.
It gets your rhythm going, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and do you use a mindfulness app? Have you got using Headspace or
just YouTube?
Like just YouTube. Yeah.
But I mean, essentially, it can either just be a breathing exercise where you're just trying to bring yourself into the present, or you can just do like repetitive actions, like something like cleaning your room can be your action, or cleaning your car and organizing the space around you so that doesn't seem so cluttered.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing mindfulness for?
I've really started focusing on it like really hard the last month. We have like sports psychs that we get to use at High Performance Sport New Zealand. I'm working with a guy named Dr. Rod Corbin, and he's really smart and he is like specialised in this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So like kind of the last month been working around getting that organised with him. And then before that, I'd use things like apps and stuff. But having someone that you can talk to and communicate with and help it break it down even further into step-by-step kind of actions makes it way easier.
Yeah, because it's definitely something that you need in life and business and sport. Like me personally, like I use the Headspace app and I often talk about it. And I have trouble going to sleep at night because my brain is thinking about today, tomorrow, the future. And like you say, like it's hard to shut the noise down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man, especially when you go to work and people are yelling at you at work and you come home and you get yelled at by the missus or whatever.
Yeah.
You know. And so sort of turning back the clock a little bit. So at a young age, you played a truckload of sport, right? You didn't really have a preference for anything apart?
I had a preference for individual sports because I didn't like letting down teams because I was aware that having wooden legs doesn't enhance your team's abilities to win games.
Yeah.
But I was also able to recognize at that time, thanks to my dad, that it wasn't my own internal capabilities that were limiting me. It was my relationship with technology, and as that technology improved, my own capabilities improved also.
Yeah.
So I had to focus on like snowboarding and downhill mountain biking. I've always been like into hunting and stuff.
What about the downhill and mountain?
I've had to kind of give everything up. Just for running, I mean, the chance of injury in downhill is so high.
Yeah.
Like, even just like minor injuries, which affects sprinters a lot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I raced the national circuit when I was younger and came and raced up here.
That's insane.
Raced Rotorua and, downhill's so much fun.
Yeah.
I love adventure sports.
Oh, okay. Oh, I do a bit of mountain bike riding, but I'm too much of a posse to go full. I've got like an enduro with heaps of travel.
Enduro's cool.
Because I'm pretty heavy. So,
what are you riding on?
What sort of bike?
Yeah.
I've got a giant
Rain?
Giant Rain, Giant Rain. It's a couple of years old. It hasn't had a lot of use in the last 6 months, but this is sort of taking up my time. But hopefully I can get up to Macra. I'll get up to Rotorua at Christmas with my brother-in-law. Had a few trees. It'll be good times. There's one thing I quite enjoy, because you know, you get stuck in the city a little bit and you sort of, it's just that chance to be out in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's really nice being up top of Macra, eh? And
dude, I think that's so important. Yeah. I recently, actually last weekend, me and all my friends went up to Hunterville. Do you know where that is?
Yep.
Which is in the middle of nowhere for this crazy event that they call the Hunterville Hunterway Shemozzle. Okay, it is the most ridiculous. This is at a time when the entire planet is celebrating Halloween. And this tiny little town in New Zealand is having an event called the Shemozzle. No one is dressed in anything Halloween related. Yep. And it's all based around Hunterway dogs, which are a breed of dog bred in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Anyway, we went up there like to watch my friends race in the Shemozzle, which is like a race between them and the dog, because they all came over to Rio to support me. And so myself and two of my flatmates from here in Wellington went up, stayed on our friend's kind of station up there. And it was so good just to get away from the hectic rat race of living in a city. Like, you come back and it's like amusing that people beep at each other with such anger when they cut each other off.
Yeah,
like, and you realize, like, we live in the best time ever. Like, we have cars and transport. We don't have to ride horses or do all these, like, ridiculous things to survive.
You know, like, an old guy from my rugby club, he argues that that's actually a really hard time to live. And he said, you know, the 70s in New Zealand, you never ever had to lock your car. This sounds bad, but you know, you could have a few beers and drive home, generally get home safe without hurting your body. You could borrow, so lend someone $50 on the street and they'll give it back to you. He feels sorry for kids. He thinks kids are really trapped and there's rules and rigor around everything they do. But on the flip side of that, there's so much more opportunity as well for kids to do whatever they want. Like, you know, like what we're doing here today, like we're doing a podcast or effectively a radio show, right? And I've just got my laptop, some microphones, and watch some YouTube videos. You know, like, it is awesome. And for yourself, you've probably now got the whole world at your feet, right? You can do whatever the hell you want.
At my feet. Yeah, essentially. I mean,
no pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. But I mean, the idea that living in the 70s was better is like, I think, pretty ridiculous. You didn't have things like the internet to instantly access information or do things like what we're doing now.
Yeah. We couldn't watch the All Blacks tomorrow morning.
To, I don't know, communicate with someone. You'd have to ring a directory to then get in contact with them.
That would be tough.
Send letters were a thing back then. The average life expectancy was lower.
No Tinder.
Which, therefore, you've got a decreased chance of reproduction.
You got to talk to women.
Yeah. Nah, we're getting better.
So, you finished your degree now. You've got probably the New Zealand Athletic Series
coming up. I'm probably not going to race until Nationals, maybe one race before Nationals.
Okay, and when's that?
That's in March.
And is that up at Mission Auckland?
No, that it is in Hamilton this year.
Okay. And so between now and then, is it just full-time training or you got a bit of work going on?
It's full-time training. I've got a lot of speaking engagements coming up.
Cool.
And I'll probably spend maybe a couple of days brainstorming what I really want to do next kind of in life.
Yeah.
So kind of like break down what I think is really important and then kind of write down five things and then just maybe pick one or two and then forget about the rest. And I'll just focus on that for the next 5 years alongside running.
How old are you?
22.
Oh man, you're so young. you could waste the next 2 years doing something you don't really want to do. You've got so long. So
man, I did that for 3 years.
Did you?
Yeah.
So were those the 3 years after your mum died?
Sorry, I did that until... Actually, no, I mean, it's like a bit of a process, but I mean, like in your teens, it's hard to know what you want to do because the person you are during your teens is usually like a summation of external influences, like your parents kind of shaping you, culture shaping you. But from like maybe 16, just smoke weed every weekend, drink every weekend, neglected like educational opportunities back then, all the way through to I was about 19, where I was drinking like four nights a week at university, which is then when I decided to give all that up and go to Rio. I can't get those years back. It just winds me up. Like I should have been learning to code because code's so important now.
Yeah.
I could have been doing so many things that I could now have as internal capabilities to set myself up to do even greater things.
But on the flip side, right, if you hadn't... some say that it was a fantastic time at university, others will say it was a waste. But if you hadn't done that, that might not have given you the motivation and impetus to go away and then go, okay, I need to do something, change it up, ended up at Rio. And now, like you say, you've got, thanks to Mike Pirro here in Wellington who lent me their rooms, you know, Todd goes, oh, does Liam do speaking engagements? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure he does. I don't know who his agent is, but or what he costs, but, you know, we can hook it up. You must have hundreds of people wanting you to speak and do stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. After Rio, mate, I had hundreds and hundreds of emails with offerings to do different things.
Yeah. Do you enjoy speaking?
Love speaking. So, like, I went through, like, a real bad phase, like I was saying, of drinking four nights a week at university, and that's not the best way to overcome dealing with your mum passing away. And my mum was a really big influence in my life, like... I don't think of myself as being disabled, but I do have a disability, and the way that society shapes its perception of me definitely had an impact. And
do you have a car thing?
Nah, they don't give me one of those. I can access a shop from within 200 metres of something. Can you believe that? Huh? How ridiculous. Anyway, so when she passed away, like I was really, really lost. And so I had to really start thinking about who was I, what do I want to do, ruddy, ruddy, rah. And what am I talking about? I'm rambling.
Yeah, and I've lost my train of thought. But we're just talking about when you came out of university, or what was the motivation to turn yourself around, and you know, from drinking four nights a week, and then
making a decision. And so that was really about building a skill set to be able to do absolutely anything. So like, I don't like running. But that's like the easiest thing a human being can do because that's what we're made to do. There had already been a pathway built by Oscar Pistorius on how it could be done. So I brainstormed a whole lot of different things, and that was the obvious thing. Like, I was going to go to climb Mount Cook, go into stand-up comedy, go into acting, start my own business, were kind of like my different options. And going back to do I like speaking, which is what we were talking about. Yeah. Running and speaking are the two easiest things ever. We're made to communicate and we're made to run as response to threats.
Yeah.
So when a gun goes off, made to run, we're made to communicate with people. I don't think, for me, there's no difference between speaking between three people and 300 people.
Yeah.
So yes, going back to the original question, I love speaking.
Yeah. And are they more than just corporate engagements as well?
So I've done like universities, schools, corporate engagements. Yeah. I really want to be able to develop my own skill set to do more keynote speaking at business conferences and businesses. Yeah. So I think I'm probably going to have to start my own business to give myself some form of credibility. I already am my own business. Like I have a brand, obviously. I am a business, but to build a business is something else. And so I think I'll probably, that might be the next thing that I go for.
Yeah, you certainly got the charisma and the tenacity and the personality to do it. And the cool thing is that you are so young, you could do it for a couple of years. And like I was saying before, you could be 24 or 25 and go, I don't want to do this anymore. And you've still got
ages to play it safe. You've still got
absolute years ahead of you. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Hey, I read about Oscar Pistorius, and was he... Whatever's happened to him, you know, that's a moot point. But, you know, he did inspire a lot of people to get into running and athletics.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and was he a little bit of it without saying?
I'm not really inspired by athletes that much.
Yeah.
So I'm for me, the value in my life is derived from my relationship with technology, as I said earlier. So I look up to innovators.
Yeah.
Like at the moment, people like, you know, even Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, just the average person starting out a business is what I know adds value directly to society. So they are people that I've always looked up to. Oscar was for me was he's provided essentially a template of how it can be done. What he did was incredible. I think he was short-sighted in going to the Olympics because it brought in regulations on the technology for then our sports, which is limiting. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course he inspired lots of people. Yeah. Obviously now after shooting his girlfriend, it's gone the other way. But to me, nah.
And you spoke to his coach at the start of this?
No, I spoke to him. I spoke to Oscar at the start of this year while he was on home detention.
No way.
So like, yeah, I was a guy who was never really excelled at anything when I was younger.
Yeah.
Mainly because I was distracted, I cared about hanging out with my friends, whatever.
Yeah.
And part of developing a skill set into which I feel like if I decide to go all in on something, I'll achieve it, was, you know, you've got to reach out to the best people. So before 100%. You climb a mountain, talk to the dude that's gone up.
Yeah.
He'll be able to tell you the quickest route, the easiest route, and avoid all the risks. So hell yeah, I reached out to Oscar. I got in touch with him indirectly through his coach, and then we Skyped. And so we talked. I mean, obviously, we didn't talk about his, you know, his situation with court proceedings, but we talked about training for hours on end and what he thought worked and what I thought worked. And in the end, he didn't actually give me any advice that was beneficial, and I just ended up sticking to what I was already doing, and it worked out. But you can't leave things like that on the table.
100%.
Yeah.
If you don't ask, you don't get. But also, you've got no way to compare yourself or know what he was doing compared to what you were doing, which was different, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really important, eh? And it's, one thing that always surprises me is that when you do reach out and ask for help, those people at the top are pretty willing to help someone.
Hell yeah.
It's crazy, eh? It's, even with yourself, knocked on a few doors and said, hey, you've got time to chat to me, and I know people are busy like yourself, eh? And people will give up their free time. It's just,
absolutely.
You just got to ask.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Get that old LinkedIn.
The old LinkedIn, that's a classic. I can't stand LinkedIn. I like LinkedIn, but I can't stand LinkedIn. Like, its user face just winds me up because it's so it's so disorganized.
It is. It's quite distracting as well.
It's distracting.
It is all over the place. If anyone here is listening, they could probably. Well, I've got the CEO of Vendor next week, Alex Fuller. Maybe I'll drop that in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could go do some stuff with Vendor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, be a brand ambassador. Yeah. Hey, so. After Rio Olympics, probably at the Rio Olympics, what was the next steps? Was there like a little bit of a party phase? Did you have any time to sort of actually enjoy the
location? Not really. So I had really great intentions of studying while at Rio. Like I was still enrolled at university for my capstone papers. And I got into the village, put my books on the desk, said I'll see you in 10. Didn't see them for the rest of the time I was there. And I got back to university and thought, man, this is going to be tough. There's going to be a lot of catching up to do. On top of speaking engagements, getting a manager organized and a lot of things. So was there a party phase? No. Was there a lot of eating junk food and putting on 8 kgs? Yeah,
8 kgs, that's a good effort. Was that the free McDonald's?
Nah, man, I feel so bad about it. I rarely eat fast food. Like in the last 3 years, I've hardly eaten fast food. And then I made one mistake at Rio by kind of putting that on my Snapchat, which is a real lesson learned. Like I'm so against like young people eating fast food and athletes kind of being sponsored by fast food companies.
Yeah.
And I did that and I'm like, oh, there goes all my credibility and kind of campaigning for athletes to push for healthier lifestyles. But I just eating like, you know, way too many carbs and just training less and being stressed are just all factors of putting on weight. Okay. No party phase. I'm not really like I've done my partying. Like I started drinking when I was 14. Like just the New Zealand binge drinking culture just lured me in, sucked me up. By the time I'm 19, I'm like, this is so boring. Like I was so depressed. No party phase. I didn't even really feel like celebrating after Rio that much. It's not like when, you know, people would win the lotto. That'd be, I feel like, the best euphoric feeling ever.
Yeah.
When you achieve something, it's not a lotto-like feeling. It's kind of like, okay, I've achieved it. It's not, like, surprising.
Yeah.
You know, I've put in 3 years of training twice a day some days, you know, just dedicating myself to that craft and learning as much as I could. So it's just really after Rio, what's next?
So some people, you know, there's the expectation of when you win something that your whole life is going to change, or you're going to feel different. And you're saying that...
No, well, it may for some people, but for me, I'd stick true to myself and stick true to what I've always been doing. And
so you're like, cool, tick that, done, dusted, on to the next thing?
Yeah, and just try to improve what I'm already doing, essentially.
Yeah. And then you had, like, countless TV shows and interviews. There's so much YouTube footage. You know, I was up late researching. And you put it out there, hey, you want to do some stand-up sort of comedy and things like that. Is that still something you want to do?
Yeah, sure. It's just about figuring out, like I said,
and timing.
And yeah, with timing, like that's a tough one to, like a tough pathway to deal with sponsors, because in stand-up, you say a lot of things that are quite controversial, which insult a lot of people, and which in turn is essentially bad publicity for companies that are involved with you. So like, I'm not sure which pathway I'm going to go down directly. At some point in time, that's definitely something I want to do. Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld, he's quite good at being the middle road guy without quite offending everybody.
Yeah, he's incredible.
But I think he's a genius.
The thing is, so I've recently been in the UK for a show called Stand Up to Cancer. Yep. While I was there, I met a lot of writers for shows like John Oliver, different TV shows, different comedians who know different people.
Yep.
And they all say, like, you tell a joke 19 to 30 times really, really poorly, and people don't laugh before you learn how to craft it and say it right. So when you see people like Jerry Seinfeld, Larry David, and other comedians, I can't name...
Corey Gonzalez Mercer, who's a mate. Throwing it out there.
Yeah, any sort of comedian, just seeing the finished product. It's like you're seeing kind of like me running around in Rio and I make it look easy in some cases. But in the process of getting to that, there's a lot of people insulted. And one of the dangers now with social media is that people can record your shows and upload it straight away, and then the joke comes across wrong. So people like Dave Chappelle now, you can't take your phone into his shows. Awesome. Like, because it makes him a better artist.
I haven't heard much from Dave Chappelle recently, actually. He's sort of gone a little bit quiet.
He goes under the radar. He doesn't like being pushed around in the industry. Yeah. He took off to Africa. So like, there's a whole, he got offered like $50 million for like an HBO series.
Yeah.
But he thought that like everyone was kind of putting subliminal messaging in his work, and he thought that like they were taking him away from his art form. And so he just said, nah, sharp shop, said no to the $50 million, went to Africa. And so there's times where he just lays low, smokes a bunch of weed and does stuff.
Did you hear the Tim Ferriss interview with Jamie Foxx?
No, I haven't.
Check it out, man.
Was it good?
Yeah, man, he's a talented dude, but he's a hard worker, and he's, you know, he sort of puts a few things down to luck and things like that. So we can grab a break on some water.
No, you're up.
Keep going. Unfortunately, I don't have beers or wine to celebrate your finished degree. I wasn't sure if it is only like middle of the day. It was probably a little bit too early.
It's 1:30.
I'm pretty sure Mike Perry's got Heineken's in the fridge.
I'm going to have to pass. Got to drive.
Yeah, good man. Hey, one thing that I generally sort of talk about and I'm quite passionate about is dealing with depression, and we sort of touched on mindfulness as well, and you've obviously had some pretty tough times. When you said that you sort of went through that alcohol phase, or you're drinking and partying, and after your mum died, was there something or some things that and tools that you used to try and get you out of that rut or that slump and get you back on track?
Yeah, big audacious hairy goals. So that's like a term used by lots of different people.
Yeah.
It's like setting like a really, really big goal that you really have to dedicate a lot of your time to that. Like, I just basically made it impossible that like doing or drinking or going out partying would like give me any sort of value.
Yeah.
So by like having university to focus on and having like a goal, that is the best way to get out of depression, having goals. Going to Rio meant that I was now going to become super duper fit. Like, I had to get fit really fast. I had to eat really, really healthy food. And becoming a professional athlete, you essentially do all the things that like create like good chemistry within your body.
Yeah.
You develop like a skill set that kind of makes you happy all the time.
Yeah.
So just like, it was really strategic in choosing Rio for a reason.
So specifically when you're goal setting, how do you goal set? Do you are you pen and pad writing stuff
pen
down?
And pad for
yep.
sure
yep.
Whiteboards I think are fantastic. So it's really important to determine what you value, and it's really hard to kind of figure that out. And if you can't figure that out, just even if you like the idea of something, just picking something and choosing it is like a good option. But figuring out what you think, predicated on your own internal capabilities, what you think you're good at,
yep.
what you might be able to achieve in that time frame,
yep.
And how you might be able to go about achieving it is what I...
And you write that all down?
I write that all down. Yep. Yeah, I had like pages and pages and pages yep. In my textbook.
Yep.
And so I'd go through, like, say, what do I want to do? And so Mount Cook... Why would Mount Cook be important? Well, you're kind of climbing a mountain. You know, I'd be able to call it climb for cancer.
Yeah.
How would I go about doing it? What would I need to do? I need to get new limbs. Who would I contact? Mark Ingalls is a double amputee who's already climbed it.
Yeah.
Contacted him, reached out to him.
Wow.
Brainstormed about it.
Yeah.
So then I had all these kind of scenarios that I could look at on pen and pad and then go, that one.
Cool.
And that one I pick, and in a short amount of time, I'm going to achieve a certain amount of personal growth, that.
And so do you then go back, like you're saying, like the whiteboard, like do you have your goals visible? So do you look at them every day, or do you review them weekly? What's your process?
I did for about the first year, and now I'm just so obsessive about like the objective tasks that I want to do right. in life that yep. I don't need to.
Yep.
So a lot of people just... People focus on people in their lives, and now I've become very objective. I just focus on what I want to achieve.
Yeah, that's
and
so awesome.
It's sort of about just developing habits and patterns that
yeah.
make that happen.
A little bit like being more organized.
Yeah.
And have
exactly,
you? Where are your medals at the moment?
They are down in Nelson in my dad's house.
Yeah, nice.
Because you know they might get stolen. I don't know what they're made with, but they're getting all scratched from wearing them.
Yeah.
And I work super hard for them, and that's what I have to show. So
it's probably a good thing that you left them down there. Yeah, I saw a couple of things, and someone said that there was potential for you to lose them.
It's probably about 90%.
Yeah,
wear them out in the town.
But well,
I don't show them off. I'm not like a. I never like to wear them. I don't really like to show off. I don't know. It's just not how I am.
It's not the Kiwi culture, really.
It's probably, it's probably a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I'm not a huge... Yeah, I think you have to celebrate success, especially in your case. Like, you've had a lot of success. But also what's cool is that you are inspiring to other people as well. So your success creates motivation and inspiration for more people. So it wasn't just like he's an awesome runner, he's run fast. But your journey and what you've overcome, I think, is absolutely phenomenal. So
I hope so, because people look up to people that have become successful in society, and they think that they're successful because they have some sort of esoteric, unachievable qualities.
Yeah,
I've met so many successful people now
yeah.
that I know are just people. They're just normal people.
Yeah,
but they just have a set of habits that allow them to be successful.
Yeah,
I totally believe anyone can do anything if they put all the different keys in place.
And you're a big reader?
Big reader, yeah. Love reading.
What sort of books do you read?
A lot of autobiographies, because then that
awesome.
I figure out how other successful people have achieved things.
Have you got a top one, your favourite?
Richard Branson's books. I'm going to have to go with him.
Just because Losing Your Virginity?
Yeah, which is fantastic. Awesome, yeah. Because Richard Branson has dyslexia. I'm pretty sure I'm either mildly dyslexic or have attention deficit disorder or something.
I had all of that.
Yeah, and he's just such an outgoing, positive guy who's making such a positive impact in the world. Other people's books that I've enjoyed, I didn't really think Elon Musk's one was that great. I
haven't read it.
It's not written by him, and he doesn't have a lot of input, so it's not probably not worth it.
Yeah.
I've read The 4-Hour Work Week, Tim Ferriss, a lot of his self-development stuff. I don't know. There's lots of books out there.
There is a lot of. Just recently, I've got recommended Legacy by James Kerr, a little bit about the All Blacks.
I haven't read it.
I'll give it to you. Dom Harvey gifted it to me, so I'll give it to you.
And I'll send a tweet to Dom.
Yeah, and it's like frayed and stuff because he used to read in the bath with it, so it's been wet.
Right.
So there's a little bit of Dom love in there, some bubbles and stuff. Man, that's an outstanding book. I'm a big believer in books and reading and getting inspiration.
Yeah, Ronda Rousey's book's fantastic.
Oh, is it?
Oh, dude, Ronda Rousey's book is incredible. After, because she went to the Olympics, and
in what sport?
Judo. I think she went twice.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
After coming back from the Olympics, she was like a bum. She was sleeping in her car, working in a bar.
Yeah.
And kind of like you'd never look at that person at that point in time in their life and go, yep, she's going to be a global superstar.
Yep.
And then like events unfold and you see how they unfold and how she reacts to certain things. And it's just really, 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 really incredible.
Do you think she's going to come back into UFC and make an impact?
She's got a fight at 207 or 208. Maybe, 207 against...
Christmas?
New Year's. Amanda against Nunes, which is the Brazilian.
She's a big girl, right?
She's a massive girl. Yeah. I have no idea. Like, I'm not an MMA expert. Like, I'm a casual fan.
Yeah. I'm trying to get... obviously the Joe Rogan podcast and I've got a couple
gets
of
you into it.
I'm
trying
to get in. Yeah. And, like, my mate, Corey Gonzalez, Mercer, the comedian, like, he's really into it. We had a bit of a chat about it, and I want to know more about it so I can talk. Because I find it is interesting.
Before the UFC main cards, you know, big fights, I am way more nervous than when I'm out running. Like, then in exams, like this Conor McGregor, Eddie Alvarez fight, I'm going to be totally sucked into. There's so much hype around it that I've vested my emotions in it so much that... The fight starts, my heart's probably, about to explode.
They are the masters of hype, those guys, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dicko Events should be talking to those guys.
Yeah.
If he listens.
Absolutely.
Hey, a couple more questions. What does success mean to you? Or do you have a definition of what success is for Len Malone?
I had a really good one, like a year and a half ago, that I'd always say to people, and now I've forgotten it. Like, the classic response is just being better than you were yesterday. But I had, like, a really good definition of success. I can't think of it. No, not really. Success is, I don't really have any sort of definition of defining success. Yeah. I mean, success is a process more than anything.
Do you want to get married and have a family and do all that stuff
one day? Yeah, absolutely. Like, a family kind of, hopefully, have a kid before I'm 30.
Yeah.
The difficulty is
I'd wait.
Yeah, you reckon? Yeah, I don't know.
You got plenty of time for that, bro.
It's pretty fucking hard to get a girlfriend who's kind of on like the same path or has the same mindset.
And why so many like professional athletes or actors end up, actors dating actors and athletes.
It's because they understand.
Like, and it's a huge commitment, especially
huge
on your behalf.
Commitment.
Yeah.
Like, I've had a girlfriend and it was just impossible to make it work with kind of like, I don't go out ever. Or do anything fun because I'm just focused on what I'm doing in life, So it's tough.
So you're single at the moment?
Single at the moment,
On the market.
On the market, mate.
Is there anyone in New Zealand that you would like to go on a date with?
On name? Yeah, I could name a few, but I mean, I know them. I don't want to make it awkward.
You're Facebook friends with them.
Facebook friends with them. There is. But the second thing is like it's hard to date a person when you're on like a journey to something and you have to fail a lot.
Yeah.
People that don't understand failure, like it's a lot easier to get to a point where two people are successful and then they join.
Or meet someone and then say, cool, I'll see you in 3 or 4 weeks because I'm busy doing my own thing.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Yeah. So just cruising for the moment?
Just cruising, trying to make money. Just
trying to
survive.
Make money. Yeah, good on it. If you were stuck on an island or you got sent to an island, you could only take one book, one movie and one album. And because you're a young guy, an album was a CD, so it's got like, only 10 or 15 songs. One artist, or should I say?
Ooh. I'm going to have to go with Rodriguez. I don't know what his album's called. It might even just be called Sugar Man.
Rodriguez. Oh, yeah. Another one. Yep.
Which is quite old, and that was the anthem for the South African apartheid movement. One book. It's going to have to be maybe Game of Thrones, one of the Game of Thrones books. Something with a big storyline to keep me entertained.
You've read those?
I've read the first two, yeah.
Okay.
And then I got sucked into the series. I'm like, books. Got visual stimulation now.
Yeah. There's a lot of that as well.
And what was the last thing?
Movie.
Yeah. Favorite movie of all time? Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah.
Okay.
Big fan.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Leo DiCaprio. Have you read that book? Have you read his book? Yeah. Jordan Belfort?
The book is so much more extreme, better than the movie.
The book is, you know, when he's driving the helicopter and he crashes it. And
it's, like, you think everyone's like, oh, the book will never be as good as the movie. They would have made the movie over top. The book. And then Catching the Wolf of Wall Street is really good too, which is the second book.
Have you seen the Jordan Belfort straight line selling video series stuff?
No.
It's actually, I had a look at it. It's actually pretty good.
Is it? What does he do? Yeah. Is he just like consultant?
Yeah,
is he consulting?
Yeah, sales consultant, basically, yeah. So he'll go to like a company and train everyone up and use their his toolkit methodologies for, you know, he basically draws like a straight line, and you know, when they're below the line, it means, you know, your sales not going well. When you're above the line, it means, you know, you can double, triple, you know, like in the movie, you just keep feeding them more and more and more shitty stock, and they just keep buying. But
it
does actually make a little bit of sense. You check it out. I think there's a whole heap of it's all online. It's pretty accessible. But
I heard that once he got out of jail, he was making around $200,000 per engagement.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why they're all spearing, saying, well, he should be paying back.
More money, I don't know if he gets royalties or not from the film. Surely, because, I mean, it's based on his books.
I think so, but there's like the FBI got involved, just
that's
recently.
That's to do with the Malaysian National Fund has been, like, corrupted, and they were involved in investing in kind of, like, dodgy companies and stuff.
Have you heard of the guy called GS Elevator? That's what I handle, GS Elevator. So this guy was tweeting about stuff he would hear in like Goldman Sachs or, you know, like crazy, crazy stuff that goes on in those sorts of banks on Wall Street. Anyway, there's a book called Straight to Hell by John LeFerre. And this guy is, he was born in London, worked in London, UK, and then got sent to like Hong Kong and stuff.
And in finance?
Yeah, in finance. He's a stockbroker. He's like another level.
Oh, really?
These guys are doing some crazy stuff, man. Like, and they're going to make a movie about it as well.
Oh,
but
fantastic. I'll have to get that.
Oh, that's the fastest book I've ever read.
Really?
I read it in a day. And I'm a slow reader.
Yeah,
I'm looking up it. I can't read that fast. Yeah. One other question. If you could host a TV show in New Zealand, what would it be?
Something on startups.
Yeah, there's a gap, in New Zealand.
Yeah, definitely. Even a podcast, even for the Australasian, Asian market. But Unfiltered, do you know what Unfiltered is?
Oh yeah, I'd love to talk to Jake Miller. Have you met him?
No, I haven't. But do you know Azelle Kochu from, she runs Story in Wellington?
Yes,
I've heard of him. Yep. Well, you should get, because you know Arnie. Do you know Arnie?
Yes.
Or Josh Mossman?
I know Josh. Yep. So I know Josh.
And then Arnie lives with him, and that's Arnie's cousin. No Go way. About it that way.
Yeah,
he's done well, eh? I mean, he's interviewed Richard Branson.
Bro, he's just knocking it out of the park, mate.
Yeah.
And like a guy that I work with, he skydived with his old man and Jake, like from age of 16, and he'd been telling me about this kid for years. And he says, "You wait, this kid's gonna go." And sure enough, man, like this is 5 or 6 years ago, like when he was 16. Yeah, he is just. I have reached out to him. He would be pretty awesome. He's, you know, he's had gone through a little bit of tragedy like yourself. And,
adversity. Adversity's good.
It is good, eh? Because you touched on it before and said, like, Richard Branson, you know, his adversity, he was, like, severe dyslexic, right? Mm. And a lot of those people that have done really well have had to get over adversity at some stage of their lives, eh? Yeah. I think sometimes, it's probably a bad thing to say, I was going to say, if you're growing up and the perfect scenario, sometimes when you get a little bit old and you have to actually deal with a little bit of shit, that's when
you have no resiliency to things, so you've been, that's that whole cotton bud theory, like you cotton bud your kids and they have no resiliency to deal with kind of external threats or changes in their environment.
Hey mate, I won't chew up too much of your time. Thank you so much for agreeing to come down here and catch up
with
me.
Thanks, we have to do this again sometime.
Have you apart from speaking engagements, so we can I'll get the details on my website about how we can get hold of your manager and stuff like that. Sponsors?
So manager's working on sponsorship. He's negotiating at the moment.
Yep. So
a bit of a long process.
What are you looking for? Clothing?
So an apparel, like, it's difficult though. Cause
you
like
a car?
No, get it. That's in the process.
In the process? Yeah. Okay, yeah.
The tough thing is like, I'm quite concerned with climate change.
Yeah.
And so then it's, you know, working with brands, it's not just like a product mule, but someone to like engage with kind of their end segments and help push towards more sustainable production lines, that sort of thing. But yeah, obviously apparel, apparel, maybe like a finance company, a bank, that sort of stuff.
We're in the Mike Pierre offices.
We are.
He does finance, and maybe we could reach out to Mike.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. And a few others. Yeah. Yeah. But if they don't come through, which I mean is a possibility, I'll probably start my own company within like the next month or so.
I think you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could do whatever you want. I think you'd go a long way, whatever path you choose.
Yeah.
I'd love to see you in a startup. Yeah. Having a crack at a couple of ideas, maybe jump in an incubator or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know the guys at Creative HQ and stuff. Yeah. They're all fantastic people. Yeah. I'm moving back to Auckland on Tuesday.
Oh, well, okay. So you're going to base yourself up there?
Yeah, well, that's all my training and stuff is, and so I've just commuted. Because I did I did 2 years here at university, and then this year I moved up to Auckland for training. I got a new coach. And so my life's kind of up there now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's lots of smart people in Auckland.
There's a lot of smart people. It's a good place. So
yeah,
it's
and I travel between, because I love Wellington.
Yep.
Wellington has the coolest kind of culture. It's got a real heart to the city.
Yep.
And then Auckland's kind of dispersed through little different pockets around the city. So they vary differently, and I like them both. So I'll end up spending a lot of time here anyway.
Yeah, I do like that. If I could bring the Auckland weather to Wellington, that would be the
Mate, it is. After 2 years of living in Wellington, I kind of, I guess, became accustomed to it. I'm like, it's not actually that bad. Then I moved to Auckland, and it was the most immediate difference ever. Just sunshine all the time.
Yeah. But let's focus on the good things of Wellington.
Yeah, the good things.
Hey, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'll chuck some stuff in the show notes, but just keep doing what you're doing, man.
And thanks,
heaps. Also, thank you for being you, because not only did you kick ass in Rio, but then you put New Zealand on the world stage for being a good bastard. And you're great to talk to, but also you're so positive that you are an amazing ambassador for our country. Yeah.
So thank you very much. I wish you all the best with the podcast.
Thanks, dude.
I hope to be back on at some point soon.
Mate, I'll definitely have you back on when you're free.
Yeah, awesome. For sure.